I thank the Lord every day for the family He has blessed me with. I am truly grateful for everything, even the little things. At 7 years ago, I didn't have a family to be grateful for, and if I hadn't witnessed the horror that I did, I may never have had one. My name is Henry Charles. I used to be an orphan, and this is my story. I never met my real parents, because for as long as I can remember, my home was the Blue Saints Orphanage. Like every other orphan child, my dream was to be adopted. I would get giddy and excited every time potential parents came to the orphanage. But time and time again, my hopes were shattered as I remained there. Now, I knew I wasn't the reason why I hadn't been adopted, as there was nothing wrong with me or any of the other kids at the orphanage. But as I grew older, I came to realize that the Blue Saints Orphanage had gotten a reputation, and it wasn't a good one, as it was dubbed the Cursed Orphanage. There were numerous reasons pertaining to why the orphanage was called this, but the major reason for the nasty nickname was because the numerous potential parents who came to adopt a child always met a lethal accident when leaving or arriving at the orphanage. From horrendous car crashes to mysterious falls from the high balconies in the orphanage, no one came out of the place alive. It didn't take long before the numerous mysterious accidents that happened began to spread, and with the news out there, potential parents decided not to come to the orphanage. At the time, I thought I would be there forever and I would never get a family of my own. But through all my pain, I had a shoulder to cry on, and that shoulder was one of the orphanage's caretakers, Sister Joan. Sister Joan was like a mother to me and the rest of the children that were at the orphanage. She was also the head caretaker, so potential parents who were interested in adopting a child would always go to her office for screening. She was one of the kindest people I had ever met, as she always comforted me when I was sad. One of the days when I thought I was going to be adopted and I wasn't, I told her, "I guess I'm never going to get a family." She looked at me with kind eyes and said, "What are you talking about, young Henry? You already have the best family a boy could have. You have me, your friends, and everyone else at the orphanage. We are all your family." I knew she was trying to comfort me, but I said, "That's not what I meant. It's different, and you wouldn't understand." She smiled and then replied to me with, "You know, the world isn't a great place, and most times you don't get what you want. So you have to hold on to what you have and never let it go, even though it's not exactly what you want." The conversation made me feel a bit better, and we continued to talk and laugh for the rest of the night. 2 years had passed in the orphanage, and I was 12, going on 13. I knew once I became a teenager, my chances of getting adopted would be incredibly slim, as potential parents only liked adopting children. So I prayed to be adopted soon, and on Monday morning, my prayers were answered. I was ecstatic when a couple walked into the orphanage. It hadn't happened in a while, so it made me beam with joy. As Sister Joan showed them around, the woman walked up to me and began to play with me. After a while, Sister Joan called her and said, "There are still some things that she needs to show them before they go to the office to talk." I was really happy because I knew the woman liked me and she could be my potential mother. I then remembered what happened to the couples who came to the orphanage, so I became scared. I don't really know why, but I decided to follow the couple around and make sure nothing happened to them. I knew the orphanage pretty well, so I could follow them without being detected. After Sister Joan was done showing them around, she invited them to her office. I quickly rushed to the office so that I could get there before them. Luckily for me, the door was left open, so I walked in and I ducked under a table that was at the corner of the room. The table had a crevice in it, so I could see through it. After a few minutes, Sister Joan walked into the room with the couple. They began to talk, and the couple said, "We really liked the Henry boy, and we would love to adopt him." Sister Joan then scrunched up her face like she was angry at the statement. But the couple didn't notice, so they kept talking like everything was fine. Eventually, they all finished speaking, and as the couple stood up to go, I watched Sister Joan bring out a crowbar from beneath her desk, and with no hesitation, she hit the unsuspecting couple behind their heads. Their bodies fell to the floor as they were both knocked unconscious. Sister Joan then proceeded to repeatedly bash in the skulls of the unconscious couple And with every blow she landed, she muttered the words, "They're mine. They're mine. They're mine. They're mine." Over and over. As their heads were bashed in and the innards of their skulls were revealed, I felt bile coming up my throat as the morbid scene made me want to throw up. I held it down as I knew if I made any sound, I would be noticed. When she was done, I watched her topple a huge cupboard onto the bodies of the couple so she can stage the murder as an accident. After that, I watched her compose herself before she began to scream.
"Someone help! Help! There's been an accident!"
She ran out of the room screaming the same lines. I got out from under the table and I was completely horrified. I looked around the room and I saw a cell phone sitting on one of the chairs in the office. I grabbed the phone and I ran out of the room before anyone could see me. When I was alone, I began to think about what I should do. I knew I had to call the cops, but I hesitated as the woman I just saw murder two people was like a mother I never had. It was the hardest decision of my life, but I decided to do the right thing, as I knew if I didn't do it, I would be leaving every single child in the orphanage under the hands of a killer. I called the cops and told them everything that happened. After some minutes, numerous cops filled the orphanage, and from my room, I saw them escorting Sister Joan in handcuffs as she was being taken away as she began to scream.
"They are my children, all mine. No one deserves to take them away."
When she was put into the car, the cops came looking for me as they asked for the child named Henry. I told them it was me, and they asked me to tell them everything that I saw. So I did. After that, the crime scene was examined and they knew I was telling the truth. They told me that I was a brave boy and they proceeded to move me and the rest of the children to a new orphanage. That night, it was revealed on the news that Sister Joan was behind all the mysterious accidents that happened to the couples who visited the orphanage, as she confessed to cutting numerous car brakes and pushing potential parents off the orphanage's balcony when they came to visit. The incident traumatized me in many ways, as I saw Sister Joan as a mother figure, and I never thought she'd be capable of committing numerous murders. Things weren't really great after that incident, but after a while, my silver lining came as I was adopted 2 months later into a beautiful home. I'm 19 years old now, and I have a mother and siblings who love me as if I was one of their own. That's why I'm always grateful for the little things. Nowadays, whenever I see people getting angry when they don't get every materialistic thing they want, I would always tell them, "You have a family and a home, and if that's not enough to be grateful for, I really don't know what is."
Hey guys, I see many of you commenting on my videos that this channel deserves 1 million subscribers. But I also see the percent of people who watch my videos aren't actually subscribed to the channel. So, if you like the content, want to support my channel, and want to see this channel reach 1 million subscribers, or maybe 500,000 subscribers, then go ahead, subscribe, and hit the bell icon. It's free, and you can always change your mind later.
I woke up hearing the doorbell. My bedroom is on the other side of the orphanage, so it took me some time to get up and walk to the main door. It's 5 a.m. in the morning, and the entire orphanage is still wrapped in the blanket of deep sleep. Who could it be at this hour? I generally stay in my office, which is close to the main door. I looked outside and saw the rays of the morning sun had just begun to light up the valley. A thick layer of snow hid every single inch of grass. I walked through the long corridor and opened the main door while breathing the cold, smoky air. Winter is cruel here. As I opened the door, I was stunned. A little girl dressed in a tattered blue frock stood on my doorstep. She was trembling in the cold. Her eyes were wide and her lips were rough. At that little age, it felt like she had seen the worst days already. "Oh my God, are you all right?" The little girl fainted on my porch before she could say anything more. I immediately carried her inside, covered her inside a warm blanket as she slept for the entire afternoon. I have been running this small orphanage in this mountain valley for the last 7 years. The entire morning, I sat near her bed as she slept. She was drowning in a high fever. So when Dorothy, my assistant, woke up and came to my room, I told her everything. She gave the girl medicine, and we sat down to discuss what is going to be our first move. What if she is lost? Her parents might be looking for her, but there's no other residence nearby. What was she doing in that snowy valley alone? I think we better call the cops, Dorothy. I can sense something awful has happened to this child. I will inform them right now. The cops came, and I told them everything in detail. We were discussing this girl sitting in my office when the door opened slightly and a familiar face peeked in. It was Dorothy. She said in a tensed voice, "The girl has awakened." Those two police officers got up immediately to talk to that little girl. I followed them to my room. As we entered, we saw the girl was sitting on my bed and staring at the sky from the window. A small but polite interrogation took place. The cops asked the girl about her family and how did she come here. She said her name is Samara and she has no family. I realized she is just another homeless girl who knocked on my door looking for shelter. The cops took her picture to run her details. We all felt she was hiding a dark past that none of us is aware of right now. I told the cops I will happily look after her until they find more information about her whereabouts. Since that day, Samara tagged along with us. I introduced her to the other girls of the orphanage. Even though they were welcoming to her, Samara always kept her distance. She didn't play or talk or even smile. She just stood or sat quietly and watched the snowy valley. One winter afternoon, kids were playing snowball in the front yard. Dorothy was cooking lunch inside. I was knitting a woolen scarf sitting on my rocking chair on the porch when I saw Samara standing near a barren tree and staring at something like a statue. I walked up to her and followed her eyes. She was staring at the small bridge over the Wild Mountain River. It was an old bridge, and no matter how cold it gets here, the water under it never freezes. The current is so strong that the ever-flowing icy water never stops for a second. "What are you staring at, Samara?"
"I remember that bridge."
"What? Did something happen there?"
"I was pushed from that bridge down in the river."
"Good Lord! Who pushed you?"
"My sister."
"Why didn't you tell the cops about this?"
"She will be here soon. That's why I came to you."
Saying this, Samara turned around and went inside the orphanage. I stood there speechless, surrounded by the cackles and laughter of other girls playing around me. What did she just tell me? Does it mean she does have a family? Then why is she wandering in these mountains all alone? I couldn't help but contemplate on this thought. How come a 7-year-old girl survived after being pushed into those rough currents flowing under the bridge? I tried to talk to Samara about this many times that day, but she avoided me like a plague. Her behavior was so unnatural as a 7-year-old. She was highly mature at her age, and sometimes she used to get into these trances where she spoke quiet, shocking things that none of us will expect to hear from her. I didn't tell anyone about this because there was so much under the dirt that I doubted whatever was happening revolving around this strange little girl. But as more days passed, the situation grew tenser. A bad omen kept hammering in the back of my head as I felt something sinister is yet to happen. The next morning, I was sitting in my office when I heard a car horn outside. Two women walked in and Dorothy brought them to my office. There was a girl about 24 or 27 years of age, accompanied by a woman in her late 60s. The girl spoke in a calm voice.
"Hello, Miss Morris. I'm Courtney, and this is my mom, Miss Winchester. I am planning to adopt a child."
I welcomed them with great joy that finally, something good will happen. After a long time, a child will get a home from my orphanage. I took them on a small tour of the place and told them to feel free to look around. All of the girls were running around the house, and Courtney conversed with each one of them in a very polite manner. Whereas her mother, Miss Winchester, was constantly fidgeting and making a frowned face like she doesn't want to be here. I could tell from her behavior that something was bothering her. I was about to ask Dorothy to make tea when I saw Samara come out of her room. She was staring at Miss Winchester with bloodshot eyes. Miss Winchester also looked at her with a confused face. Samara's breathing got heavy and a suppressed anger sparked in her wide eyes. Miss Winchester got a bit startled by the weird behavior of this girl and asked,
"Are you all right, dear?"
"No, but you are. Aren't you Eddie?"
As soon as she called Miss Winchester Eddie, all the blood in her face vanished. She was pale like a blank paper. She slowly started to tremble in fear.
How do you know that name? No one calls me Eddie except me. Can't you recognize me? I'm Judith, your little sister, whom you pushed down that bridge in
1968
when we came on a trip with our parents in these mountains. Don't you remember?
You bloody murderer.
This isn't possible. You're only 7 years old, and
you made sure that I got washed away with the current so that you can tell Dad how I accidentally slipped and there was nothing you could do. All of this just to be their one and only daughter?
What the hell is this? Courtney, let's go. This girl is insane.
I'm not insane. What happened to your favorite silver bracelet? How did you lose that?
Courtney looked at her mom and said,
Mom, what is all this? Grandpa told me you and Aunt Judith were playing when she met an accident. Did all that happen here? This is why you didn't want to come here with me in the first place.
No, she didn't want to come here because she knows what she did on a winter evening. She took me to that bridge and told me to watch my reflection on the river water. As I peeked, she pushed me, but while falling down, I grabbed her hand. Her silver bracelet came off, didn't it, Eddie?
Samara went on with her shocking words in furious anger.
For a moment, it felt like there was someone else speaking from her body.
Miss Winchester came out as Samara went close to her with her horrifying allegations. The more she went on accusing Miss Winchester, the more Miss Winchester walked away in fear. Her eyes were widened as she couldn't believe how come a 7-year-old whom she has never met before can tell all these cruel details like she was there when Miss Winchester killed her own sister. They walked right under that tree where that bridge can be seen. Samara looked at the bridge once and then looked up to a big barren branch on the tree. Miss Winchester was standing right under it. She pleaded,
"Please stop this. This is crazy, girl."
Courtney came running and screamed,
"Mom, is it true? Whatever she's saying, is it true?"
Miss Winchester broke into tears and said,
"I'm sorry. I didn't mean to kill her. I just wanted to be Mom's and Dad's favorite."
"You wanted to be the one and only,"
Samara screamed. Just then, the huge branch broke, falling on Miss Winchester's head, spilling blood and brains on the white snow. Children screamed in terror seeing the gruesome scene. Dorothy rushed to take them all inside. Courtney and I ran towards Miss Winchester as she choked to death right in front of us. Amidst all this chaos, we failed to keep an eye on Samara. When the cops came, Courtney was sitting near her mother's dead body like a stone. I was speechless and my legs were numb. The cops searched the entire valley for Samara, but she was nowhere to be found. She went away suddenly, just like she came. The death of Edith Winchester was announced as an accident, just like her little sister Judy's death. Courtney went back with some terrifying truth, and I was left in complete shock. At night, I still wake up feeling she might come back again. But something inside me makes me question, was she even real? Was she Judith's ghost that resurfaced with a new face, a new name, to take her revenge? Or was she a lost child suffering in the hands of reincarnation?
I became an orphan when I was 13. I was raised by my abusive grandfather until his death from an illness that everyone chalked up to be old age. When he died, I got pulled out of my abusive home and tossed into an equally abusive orphanage. It was one of those religious institutions that claimed to spread God's mercy to the homeless teens of the world for nothing in return other than tax exemption. And because they were so religious, people on the outside thought the nuns, acting as caregivers, must have been good people when they were anything but. Whenever someone questioned them on anything, they would chastise them for not trusting in God and punish them. And by someone, I mean me. I was just about the only one who backtalked them on a regular basis, being the rebellious teen that I was. If the nuns were feeling lazy, they'd send me to bed without dinner. Though considering the questionable quality of the stew they served, that might have been doing me a favor. Almost every meal was a perpetual stew that had been boiling away in the same old iron pot for God knows how long, containing whatever ingredients they had on hand at the time. So the taste was questionable at best and utterly disgusting at worst. But if the nuns were bored or feeling like assholes that day, which is to say, most days, they'd also beat me up with a wooden stick or lock me in the supply closet for a day too. I became familiar with every nook and cranny of the orphanage supply closet during my time with them. Most of the other kids at the orphanage had been living there all their lives, so they thought that all the cruel punishments were perfectly normal and warranted for an ungrateful brat like me. They would sometimes beat me up after the nuns were done with me too, for good measure. The only exception was a girl my age named Mary. Like me, Mary had the chance to grow up outside the orphanage before being dumped there. She knew how fucked up the nuns were, but unlike me, was smart enough to keep her mouth shut and spare herself their hatred. Whenever I got beaten up by either nuns or other children, she'd help me tend my injuries using whatever we had on hand. The other kids didn't like her much either and often roughed her up as well, though never to the same extent as me. I felt guilty whenever I saw her with bruises that she couldn't hide. The only reason the other kids picked on her was because she hung out with me. I would have understood if she ignored me to spare herself the treatment from others, but she stayed by my side even through the beatings our peers gave us. We became close, closer than the nuns caring for us would have approved of between two girls, if you catch my drift. Of all the shitty experiences I have of that damn orphanage, there is one memory that I still hold dear. Mary and I helped each other climb up to the roof of the orphanage one night while everybody was sleeping. Once there, we laid down on our backs on the tiled roof and watched the stars together. It was a cherished moment of peaceful calm in our chaotic lives. Our hands were intertwined as we tried to make out the constellations in the night sky. I wasn't very good at it, but I didn't care because I got to spend time with the person I love. That must be Orion's belt, and that's Ursa Major. And that one's our zodiac sign, right? Yep, Gemini, the twins. We look nothing alike, though. I'd say we're closer than twins, though. I felt her hand squeeze mine. In that instant, the world around me melted away. Our pasts didn't matter. Our futures didn't matter. Not even the stupid orphanage we were laying on mattered. All that mattered was the two of us being together. Have you ever thought about running away? More times than I can count. How do we do it then? Just you and me, a couple of screwed up little girls trying to make it in the world. I felt her grip on my hand tighten. That would be nice. It'll be hard for us to make a living for ourselves out there though. Probably, but at least it'll be less terrible than staying here. After a long, heartfelt conversation, we finally decided to run away from the orphanage together. Our plan was to spend the next day secretly packing stuff we might need and sneak out that very same night. For the first time since my parents died, I felt something that could have been called hope. That feeling wouldn't last, though. We found out the next day that one of the other kids saw us sneaking back inside our shared bedroom the previous night and told the nuns about us. They put two and two together and realized that there must have been something going on between us. The nuns gave us both an earful about how we need to suppress our sinful lusts because it went against the will of God and all that is natural. After that, they beat us both black and blue with wooden sticks and separated us by putting me in the supply closet again and blocking the door with a chair. While they didn't like either of us, it was clear they considered me more the guilty party thanks to all the time I backtalked them. The supply closet didn't have any windows, but I'd been locked in there so often that I had no trouble telling the time from inside. The orphanage wasn't very big, so it was easy enough to tell where everyone was by the sound they made. I heard the sound of metal spoons clanging against ceramic plates and knew that the other kids were eating dinner with the staff. And when the sounds stopped and were replaced by footsteps walking past me, I knew that they'd all gone to bed. It wouldn't have been the first time I was left to sleep in the supply closet overnight, but I couldn't help but worry about how Mary was doing. I made myself as comfortable as I could on the cold floor, like I'd done 100 times before, and waited to fall asleep. But before sleep could claim me, I heard the sound of the chair blocking the door being dragged away. I sat back up and stared at the door, expecting to see a nun come in. Instead, I gasped when I saw Mary on the other side. She looked more beaten up than I was, with one black eye and a bloody lip. And yet, she still smiled when she saw me.
"Mary, what happened to you?"
Some of the other girls roughed me up, but that doesn't matter now. "Come on, let's get out of this hellhole." She grabbed my wrist and tried to pull me out, but I resisted her pull. I wasn't quite done with the orphanage just yet.
"Maggie, there's something I need to take care of here first."
"What? Why?"
"Well, we're going to need some supplies for a few days, right?"
"All right, I'll help you then."
"No, there's no point in risking both of us. You go ahead and wait at the back gate. I'll be right behind you."
It took some convincing, but I managed to get her to leave me behind for a while. She kissed me on the last bruised part of my face and hurried out of the orphanage. I let out a sigh of relief. Mary was always a kind girl. She didn't need to see what I was about to do. I walked to the back of the supply closet and pulled out a tiny box tucked away in the very corner. I had plenty of time to explore the supply closet during all the times I got locked inside it. It was only natural that I'd find the rat poison eventually. I had a lot of experience finding and using it, after all. I grabbed the packet of rat poison and made my way to the kitchen. I opened the fridge where they kept the pot of perpetual stew and emptied the rat poison inside it. The tiny pellets disappeared, buried by all the other ingredients. When the stew is heated up to be served, they'll dissolve and become just another indescribable flavor in the mystery stew. Honestly, it was a good thing that the stew already tasted so bad as it was. When I poisoned my abusive grandfather, I had to add a little bit at a time so he wouldn't notice the taste. This time around, I could add the entire thing in and be done with it all. My only regret is that I never got to see those bastards at the orphanage choke on their own blood for what they did to me and Mary. But I guess knowing will have to be enough.